Blog Talk Radio.
Con los terroristas.
Guys, Sportsaholics 24/7 is back. Nick and Jordan are here right now. It looks like we have Brandon calling in. Wow, Brandon, welcome back to the show, and thank you guys all for being on today.
What's going on, John? Good to be on.
I'm happy.
All right, so we have a lot to talk about today. You know, the NBA is starting to heat up. The NFL and college football season almost over, getting to the final stretch. So we have a lot to talk about, and we're also going to be introducing a brand new segment at the end of the show, so make sure to listen through the whole episode. We're going to start off with the NBA, and we'll start off with very quickly about the Brooklyn Nets. Just some initial thoughts. You know, they're a local team. Last night they had a very tough game against the Timberwolves, which I think they really should have won that game. Jordan, we were talking about this before. What's your initial thoughts on this Nets team? Are they good?
Well, I mean, we're four games into the season now. They're sitting at 2-2, and it's really hard to tell. I mean, it's been a week, but each game that the Nets have played, they just look like a completely different team, which I guess can be expected under a new coach with Lionel Hollins in his first year. I guess trying to implement that system, that, you know, the changes from when Jason Kidd was there. It's going to take a little bit of time, but overall, I think, you know, if I had to give it a grade, I'd give it a B or a B minus. I think it's really good. It's really encouraging signs to see Brook Lopez back out there the past two games. I mean, last game, he really had, couldn't find a shot at all. He went 5-for-14 or something, and really struggled down the stretch and almost cost the Nets the game last night. But it's going to take time. He hasn't played in games since last December when he broke his foot. So I expect within the next couple of weeks for Lopez to get back to form and start playing better. And just some of the other guys, I think Jared Williams got off to a really good start this season. He looks much quicker. He looks like he's finally healthy. He's knocking down his shot. You know, if those two guys, Darren Williams and Brook Lopez, lead this team with adding the scoring of Joe Johnson, they're going to be tough to beat once they really get it going. And I know in the beginning of the season I picked them to slightly win the Atlantic Division right over Toronto, but, you know, Toronto's 4-1 right now. It's going to be really tough, but it's early, so we'll have to see. I'll stick with that prediction. But so far, I like some of what I'm seeing. The Nets definitely need to keep working and improving, though.
All right, now let's go to our other Nets fan, Brandon. Yeah, let's hear what you have to say.
I semi-agree with that. However, I think that the key to the Nets' success this season actually hinges more on their newer additions and their role players off the bench. For example, it'll take a lot for Bojan Bogdanovic and Jarrett Jack. They need to contribute a lot to this team in order for the Nets to have success, because we know that Brook Lopez is going to return to form. We know that Joe Johnson has been perennially clutch throughout last season and seasons before. I have a lot of confidence in Darren Williams now. I think his ankles look great. I think he's more explosive off the first dribble. I think he is a lot quicker in his movements, and I think his shot has actually improved from last season to this, regardless of injury. But I think it's all about how these new players and these bench players translate into Lionel Hollins' offensive and defensive systems, and how they play, how they react, and if they can or cannot play great basketball, mesh with the team, and just in general do their part.
Okay. And Brandon, I'm kind of surprised they didn't say the key to their success is getting a new uniform.
Yeah, really. It's a big surprise.
But in all seriousness, though, I've seen some improvement already, even though it's only four games into the season. I've seen some definite improvement since that Pistons game. The Nets' defense in that game was absolutely atrocious, and they've started to pick it up a little bit. Now let's move on to the team that a lot of people picked to win the championship. Yeah.
If I can just add one more thing, something that none of us touched upon. You know, I don't want to speak too quickly, but one thing I really like is the way Lionel Hollins is incorporating Kevin Garnett. I mean, last year Jason Kidd kind of just took him out with 8 minutes to go in the first. He didn't get back in until the second quarter. He never really got to get a rhythm going, capped at 20 minutes per game. He's had a terrible season last year, to be honest. And this year, I think he's looking for a shot more. He's being more aggressive, rebounding the ball. And if he's performing well, and we can't expect him to be the old Kevin Garnett. But, I mean, that combo of him and Brook Lopez down low is going to be really good for the Nets.
Well, guys, can I just say something? Don't be surprised if Brook Lopez is not well all the time. He's a big guy. These injuries are very hard to recover from. For example, look at Yao Ming. Look at how he never recovered from an injury. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Brook Lopez. But don't be surprised if he gets injured again. I wouldn't be surprised if it happens again. So don't give all your hopes up.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. I mean, we're not really sure about Lopez's health, but we'll see as the season goes on.
I'm not sure.
All right, now you know, before the season, a lot of people picked the Cleveland Cavaliers to pick the championship with additions of guys like LeBron James and Kevin Love. But after four games, they're sitting at 1-3. Nick, is there any cause for concern in Cleveland?
A little bit, considering their defense is weak, the team chemistry is not strong. But the reality is, they have so much talent. And they're just starting off slow. It's, what, four games into the season, and people are already like, Cavs aren't good. Cavs are overhyped. They're not a playoff team. It's four games into the season. Look at how bad Miami Heat was last year when they first started. They lost to the Sixers in their first game. They're going to gel, and they're going to win the East. If they don't win the East, then they'll get second place behind the Bulls. But they're definitely a playoff team. They're going to at least make the Eastern Conference Finals. People are so ridiculous. It's four games. LeBron's the best player in the world. Kevin Love is one of the best power forwards in the game. They're an excellent offensive team. They're just not the best. They're not the best defensive team so far. They've been slacking off. LeBron was slacking off last game, and you know it happens. Sometimes guys just don't play well.
Yeah, that's very true. It is only four games into the season. There's really no need for concern, at least in my opinion.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. I don't think there's any reason for the Cavs and Cavs fans to be concerned. I mean, back in 2010, when LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Bosh joined forces to form their own Big Three, they went 9-8 in their first 15 games, and LeBron James even himself took to Twitter to say, "Rome isn't built in a day. This takes time." Now, it appears to be the same situation in Cleveland. Not everything is meshed. There's still a lot of bad habits on the court. There's a lot of, you know, missed opportunities, missed shots, turnovers, just bad offensive, defensive plays. Let's also not forget David Blatt's a brand-new head coach in the NBA. Let's give him some time. Everything's got to mesh, and everything's got to work together for this Cavs team to be great. Right now, they're not feeling it. But because they have such an enormous amount of talent on that team, and because David Blatt is such a good coach, or was a good coach before in the Euro Leagues, I think that the Cavs will pull it together by the end of this month, and by December they'll be looking at top two in the East.
I think those are all valid points, and I do, you know, even though we're only four games in, I think there is a little bit of room for concern. On one hand, you have the comparisons to the 2010 Miami Heat, where it got off to a rough start with LeBron, as Brandon, you said, 9-8 through the first 17 games. So it's definitely going to take some time to put it together and for there to really form some great chemistry there. But from what I've seen watching these first four games, I think on one hand, you definitely need Kyrie Irving to just tone it down a bit. I know he's a more of a score-first type of point guard, but, you know, when he's scoring mid-30 points a game, and you got guys like LeBron James, who's been over the past few years one of the top two scorers in the NBA. The offense really needs to run through LeBron and not Kyrie Irving. But, you know, as both of you said, I really do think the Cavs will get it together. It's only a matter of time. They've just got way too much talent on that roster not to. The concern I'll have is in the playoffs. I think besides LeBron, you don't have a lot of guys on that team with great playoff experience, at least in the starting lineup. Guys like
Kyrie
Irving
and Kevin Love have never been.
Deion Waiters, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, all these guys have never played in the playoffs. So they're definitely be there. I think they'll be top two in the East for sure. But once we get there, then I think there's going to be some big concerns.
Yeah. I feel like this Cavs team, Brandon brought up a great point comparing this team to the Miami Heat of a few years ago. Listen, it takes time to gel. It takes time to get used to playing with new teammates. It takes time to play with a new coach. I'm not worried about this Cavs team at all if I'm a Cleveland fan. You know, this is what they signed up for. No one expected them to start the season 10-0 or anything. No one expected that. So, you know, 1-3, they have plenty of room for improvement. I think they're going to be fine.
I'm not concerned about them. I'm worried about New York.
Oh,
well,
all right.
You have every right to be worried about the Knicks, Nick. The Knicks are just an awful basketball team, no matter what way you look at it.
Brandon, they're not awful. What makes the Knicks so awful? They're not great, but they're not awful.
The coaching is bad.
Brandon,
they got
the
lucky against the Cavaliers
what
one time.
What are you
time.
Talking
That's
about?
About
have you watched one Nick game this whole year? What makes
I've
you
watched,
say the coaching is
I've
bad?
I've watched four of them, Nick.
What?
I've watched
what makes
four
you
of
say
them.
The coaching? What makes you say the coaching is so bad?
Derek Fisher's not a good coach. He's young. He's
what
inexperienced. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Brandon,
and he's
it's four games in a year. You guys are already jumping the gun saying he's a bad coach.
I'm jumping the gun.
He knew how to strategize last night against Detroit. He knew that Detroit was going to try to dominate on the front court. And what did they do? What did he do? He stopped up the front court.
Who won the game, Nick?
He knows how to play. You know, the Knicks should have won. Oh, so because he lost the game to the Pistons in his fourth game of his career, he's a bad coach?
The Pistons
what?
Were 0-4, Nick. There's no excuse. That's on Fisher.
No, you know what? All right, listen.
I think I could see Brandon's point because, you know, I think Derek Fisher will be a very good coach. I think from what we saw him playing, he was basically a coach on the court. He looks really calm and composed and really intense. He knows what he's doing. You can definitely tell it's going to take some time. You know, that's been the theme of the show so far that we've been discussing. Right now, I mean, look at Jason Kidd. I mean, he didn't really become a good coach until, I would say, January or February. So right now he may not be the best coach, but I do believe down the road he will be. I could see Brandon's point. As of right now, five games into the season, he's not Greg Popovich or Doc Rivers. It's obviously
Brandon,
not going to
– Think about it. That loss for the Knicks was not so bad. They lost 98-95 on a bullshit call. Excuse me for my friend. Nick.
Nick.
A horrible call. No. It was off of Greg Monroe. It was not off of Klay Anthony Early. Okay? And Vela played a horrible game. J.R. Smith is out. And Jose Calderon is out. What? With Calderon.
Oh, yeah, because Jose Calderon's got
all right.
Hold on. With one of those three. With one of those three. Disadvantages that I mentioned, the Knicks would have won that game. So don't talk
yeah,
about
J.R.
Smith
right. punched the guy in his groin, and Jose Calderon just sucks in general. So
what are you talking? What? Jose Calderon would have felt it.
All right, listen, we're gonna have to talk about the Knicks another time. Trust me, we will have plenty of episodes focused around the New York Knicks throughout this basketball season. But now it's time to move on to another New York team that we also focus on very often. And
yeah,
thank you.
This is exactly why I came on the show. I have a statement to make. I would like to formally apologize to the 2012 New York Jets season for calling it a circus because this is nothing compared to right now. Oh, my God.
Oh, you know, okay. There you heard
this
it.
This is bad.
I don't know.
Well, I just want to quickly note. I just want to quickly note. Thank you to Nick DiMartino. Thank you
You're welcome.
Nick. 5 o'clock on Saturday, we will be having an interview with one of the founders of the Fire John Idzik campaign. Just a quick programming update, 5 o'clock Saturday. Make sure to tune into that interview. It's going to be very, very interesting.
I got to get this guy's home phone number, his cell phone
We'll have him on. You can talk to him
gonna,
all that you want.
I am going
to
have a long conversation with this guy because I want in on this guy.
All right, now let's quickly talk about the Jets. You know, we have a few minutes to talk about them. Before we do that, quickly, if anybody wants to call in with any questions, any comments, the number to call in, as always, 347-884-8496. Once again, 347-884-8496. We have about 5 minutes to speak quickly about the Jets, and we're going to talk about them more on Saturday, but they are a disaster.
They're more than a disaster. They're a dumpster fire wrapped in garbage and sprinkled with the most perfect touch of fan turmoil. It is disgusting to look at them. They're like the Medusa of the NFL. They are just the worst, most poorly managed, worst fans in the NFL. The whole team is a disaster. Well, because the fans are jumping on the bandwagon to fire everybody. You tell me those fans?
I agree with you, Brandon.
I mean, it's like we're the Philadelphia Eagles fans all of a sudden. We're just ruckus.
Mm-hmm.
We have no discipline or self-control.
No,
yeah.
Brandon, we're 1-8. We're paying for tickets to watch these games. Or
no, I'm
on
paying
TV
for tickets.
Or whatever. Yeah, well, you have Sunday ticket, I have red zone. That's the difference between me and you. Bottom line is, we want to see our team do well. Everybody who is a part of this franchise is getting paid good money, great money, okay? We were expecting a much better year than this year, and we're pissed off. We're fans. What would you like us to do? Say, you know what?
Next
time, number 7, Geno Smith,
Nick,
please
Nick,
just
Nick,
make that.
As
make
a,
that
Nick,
Nick, can I say something?
What?
There is absolutely no point in ranting about the New York Jets right now. They're sitting at 1-8. There's nothing to say. The team's horrible. I mean, the season's over. Okay. I don't know if they're going to win another game the rest of the season. But even if they do, they'll get a high draft pick.
I hope they don't
get rid of Michael Vick. Geno Smith will not be the starter next year. You'll draft a new quarterback. You'll start all over. I can't see any scenario where Rex Ryan will be back next year.
This is,
and right now, at 9 games into the season, it is what it is. They had chances to win games. They didn't.
Listen to me. This
you know, everything is based on the record, and the record shows that the Jets are a bad football team. That's it. Every week we go on the show and we rant about how bad the Jets played and what they need to do to improve. The season's over. You're not going to go into the playoffs if they win the next 7 games. So
right.
There's no point in getting angry anymore. Look forward to the offseason.
Okay, listen.
Most heartbreaking loss was their loss to Buffalo. Because at the time, they were 1-6. They did have a tough schedule in their defense. Buffalo was not a strong team. They were at home against Buffalo. I'm thinking, in my right mind, I think the Jets have a great chance against Buffalo, and I really did think they would win. And to see them lose by 20 points against a team like Buffalo without Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller, with Kyle Orton, who's your backup quarterback in the game, starting, that pissed me off. And that is
Nick,
where I
Nick,
gave
it's
up
really,
on the team.
It's really simple. This is what's going to happen. When the final whistle blows against Miami, week 17, and the Jets settle into the offseason with probably a 2-14 or a 3-13 record, everyone's gone. Everyone. The GM, the head coach, both quarterbacks, and a lot of people. A lot of people in that organization are gone. It'll be Woody Johnson and Chris Ivory. That's it.
Woody Johnson can't fire. He's not going to fire himself.
That's it. It'll be Woody Johnson. And
he said he'll be left.
Woody Johnson, the defensive line, and Chris Ivory. That's all that's going to be left. They're going to start from square one all over again. With a new quarterback.
They're not going to get rid of
new receiving
core. Richardson.
A lot of,
they're not going to get rid of those guys.
Did I say that?
Well, you said
they're
going to
get a new GM. They're going to get a new
they're
going to
keep the defensive line.
They're
going to
draft a new quarterback, and that's it.
All right. Now, and on that note, we actually have a phone call. Let's see who we have. Thank you for calling into the show. What's your name and where are you from?
This is Joe from North Carolina.
Hey, Joe. What's your question or comment?
Well, maybe a solution for the New York Jets is Matt McGlone from the Raiders. A quarterback proven in the NFL just hasn't got his chance, really. What do you think of that?
Hey, I'm the biggest Matt McGloin fan out there. I love Matt McGloin. Matt McGloin would be the best quarterback for the Jets if he was on their roster. He's also the best quarterback on the Raiders, too.
No, stop.
And he should
it.
Be starting.
I like what I've seen. I like what I've seen from Matt McGloin when he's got a chance, like in the preseason. I was actually really impressed with him, but he's not the answer for the Jets at quarterback. He could be a decent backup.
Not
the
long term, yeah. I agree.
Not the long term, but, you know, thanks for the call.
I agree. Yeah, thanks for the call, Joe from North Carolina.
Oh, Joe, my bad.
On that note, we have about 8 minutes left in the show. If you want to call in as well, 347-884-8496. Our final topic before we introduce our brand new segment at the end of the show, college football. And let's talk about the Auburn-Ole Miss game from last week very quickly. Ole Miss, Laquon Treadwell, their star wide receiver, caught the ball at the end of the game, ran to the end zone, fumbled the ball on the goal line, and while doing that, he also broke his leg. Absolute shame that his season had to end like that. Absolute shame that Ole Miss's season had to end like that. But you look at the other side, Auburn was very impressive. Nick, is this Auburn team... are they the real deal? Are they going to be in the college football playoff?
Well, that's a very good question. The thing is with Auburn, they run that very run-heavy offense. They do. Mm-hmm. I love the coaching. That's really what I love the most about the team. I love the coaching. Nick Marshall is still suspect to an extent, because he plays in such a run-heavy offense and everything. He doesn't throw the ball too frequently. But when he does throw the ball, he can throw the ball deep, and he can throw it well. So the few times that he does throw the ball, I like what he can do, and they can stretch the field a little bit. To say, I think they have a legitimate chance, but I don't think they're as good as a team like Oregon or Alabama. I really can see them being in the top four. I think they could beat Mississippi State.
Well, honestly, I think Auburn's been really impressive this season, but – you know, don't forget, they've had a lot of close calls, like this past week against Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a heck of a football team, but, you know, they were just, you know, inches away from losing that football game and dropping out of even the conversation
literally.
For being in the playoffs. And
literally.
Literally, you know. And I think, you know, you got Florida State and Mississippi State at the top. I don't think those two teams are going anywhere. I think one of Alabama or Oregon will end up in the playoffs. And then it's going to be really tough for Auburn because I like that team sitting at number 7, TCU. I mean, they got one heck of an offense that, you know, at TCU, put up 80 points the other week. They beat West Virginia in a tough, tough environment on Saturday night. I think they're the real deal. I think they sneak into the playoffs. I really do.
I 100% agree with that. You know, a few weeks ago, we were talking about the same topic, you know, what four teams are going to make it to the playoff. TCU is one of those teams that I picked, and I felt that because if they were able to get through what I thought was the toughest game on their schedule,
they
that game against
Baylor.
Baylor
right? Yeah, they almost beat Baylor.
Well, yeah. They're still up there, though. They got past that game. They're still up in the rankings. So, which to me is a little bizarre because you look at Notre Dame and they're ranked number 10 and they had a what I think was maybe a better loss to Florida State. But I think TCU has a very legitimate chance to make it to the college football playoff. They have a very easy schedule to go out, or manageable schedule. And in my eyes, I think that they deserve to be in the college football playoff.
Yeah. The only thing that concerns me about Auburn is that their defense, I'm not trying to say they have a poor defense or a weak defense, but it doesn't always show up.
For example, against South Carolina, they let South Carolina, whose quarterback is Dylan Thompson, who's really not, who's basically kind of a no-name, and South Carolina is not known for being such a strong offense or anything. They gave up 35 points, and if you're gonna go up against the top team like Oregon, Alabama, especially Oregon, because I love Oregon's offense. Yeah, Oregon, for example, would have trampled all over them. Even Ole Miss would have trampled all over them if their defense showed up the way they did against South Carolina. So if they get past that phase, they can be a very good football team. And I love the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Gus Malzahn is one of the best strategists. He understood Ole Miss's offense perfectly. They knew exactly how to handle that finesse run game, pitch game offense.
I think even better than understanding the offense from Ole Miss, Gus Malzahn was able to do a great job to understand the defense from Ole Miss. You know,
right,
Malzahn
absolutely.
Is an offensive guru, and that defense from Ole Miss, especially that defensive line, you know, the Akimdichie, they are very, very special, very talented. And for Auburn to be able to run the ball like they did and to win that game was extremely impressive. I'm excited for this upcoming weekend. Very quickly before we go on to the final part of the show, prediction, Ohio State, Michigan State. Jordan, who's going to win?
That's a really tough call. I like the way Ohio State's been playing the past few weeks, so I'll go with Ohio State.
I'm going to go with Michigan State. I love the way Michigan State's defense has looked. Very well coached. JT Barrett is still young. I'm not sold on him yet. I like Connor Cook more. I like Connor Cook as a pocket passer, so it's not like they're playing a run-heavy offense, like, or, you know, with a weak offensive line, like when against Penn State, when Ohio State played every play against Penn State like they were in the red zone, cover, like, real huddled up close. That's what Ohio State does best. They're not going to be able to do that against Michigan State, because Michigan State plays that drop-back offense, pass-heavy. So I think Connor Cook can put on a good show.
You know, you could really make the argument that this is one of the biggest games of the college football season. I mean, the winner of this game is going to take a big leap. You know, I know these are all, like, ranked teams, but the winner of this game is going to really, you know, turn some heads and be in the conversation for the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. And my prediction is I think that the Ohio State Buckeyes are going to come out of this game victorious. And we'll have a legitimate chance of making the college football playoff. I know that's shocking for people to hear me say that Ohio State will win, but it's what I truly believe. Let's wrap up the show with our brand new segment. Basically, we don't have a name for it yet, so if anyone has suggestions, we can we'll name it after whatever you want to call it. But basically, we're each going to give a short little thing, whatever's on our minds in this world of sports, and we'll talk about it. So here's what's on my mind. I just want to talk a little bit about sportsmanship, or in this case, a lack thereof. This past Saturday, the University of Maryland played Penn State. Now, what most people remember from the game isn't what happened during the game, but what happened before it. While the teams were running out, Maryland players tried to fight Penn State players. And at the coin toss, Maryland captains wouldn't shake Penn State's captains' hands. Sportsmanship is something that really transcends sports. It's a common bond. It's like a guaranteed respect between two teams. But unfortunately, it's often all but taken for granted today. Nick, how about you?
Replay and bad calls is what's on my mind. From last night, that Knicks game, I know I'm obsessing over it, but I can't get over it. The Knicks, you know, that ball was off of Greg Monroe. It wasn't off of Lee Anthony early, no matter what you say. And I'm really mad because the Knicks could have easily won that game. It's on my mind. Just, I don't like these rules that say, you know, unless there's 100% evidence to overturn a call, don't overturn it. No, just make the best call you can make.
Okay, Jordan, 15 seconds. What's in your mind?
All right, I know we already talked about the fire John Idzik campaign, and I agree with it, but I think we really need to look at the real problem, and that's Woody Johnson, the guy who hired John Idzik, the guy who cares about money more than winning, and John Idzik is saving him money. Woody Johnson is the real problem.
All right, thank you all for listening. We will be back Saturday.
Con los terroristas.
No, I put him up to the... Maybe I put that gun in the air. I would put a card in the door.